The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So today is Halloween, which is literally means the sacred evening, the holy evening, before All Saints' Day. Tomorrow is the day we celebrate, or Christians celebrate, all the saints, I guess, which is supposed to be all goodness. And next Monday, we have the election eve, the day before the United States selects a president. So I don't know if we'll make too much of a connection between these two events, but I thought that was interesting. And Halloween is a time that many people use to recall some of the unseen parts of our world. Traditionally, it's a time to remember the dead and people who recently died, and to help them along as they, as kind of ghosts or spirits, kind of are on their way to wherever they're going next. It's also a time to celebrate or prepare for the celebration of the saints. For many people, it's a time to have some kind of relationship with the unseen world of ghosts and demons and witches and things like that, which many people, some people in the modern world, see as an opportunity to give expression to their alter egos or to parts of themselves maybe that they don't normally bring forth and come out. It's nice that it makes some sense that it happens this time of year. It's kind of, we're going into winter, and the dark, the dying, the coming to an end. And then we are, then the spring comes and things get renewed. One of the things that's interesting is that Buddhism does have a very similar celebration like Halloween used to be, not the candy and the costumes, but especially the Buddhism of China and Japan. And they have something called the Sagaki ceremony. And it's usually done on July 15th in Japan. And it's a very happy event, a celebratory event. But it's also to welcome and invite the hungry ghosts, the ghosts of the ancestors who have died and are somehow continuing to live on as some kind of particular kind of ghost, and they're kind of wandering around and having a hard time. And rather than stay frightened of them, they're invited and welcome to the temple, and then they put out food and offerings for them to feed them and support them. And so rather than abandoning the unseen world and the world of ghosts, this is a time to invite them in and to help them out, feed them, support them in ways that help their transformation as well. So in the United States, the Buddhist groups that are associated with that kind of, the Sagaki, the Japanese forms of Buddhism, some of them have switched when they do this July 15th celebration to Halloween. And like if you go to San Francisco Zen Center, I think they're right now they're probably having a ceremony up there called the Sagaki ceremony. And the Sagaki, as I understand it, the gaki is a Japanese way of saying hungry ghosts. And se means feeding, so feeding the hungry ghosts. And the hungry ghosts are an interested species of, or beings. They are, we call them ghosts in English, but they're kind of transparent. There's not much to them, but they do have bodies more than ghosts have bodies. And they have very, very, very huge bellies. Stomachs. But they have very, 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 very narrow throats. And so they just can't get enough food and water down the throat to their stomach in order to ever feel satisfied. So they're always dissatisfied, always hungry, always wanting. And it's become popular among some Buddhist groups to say, well, some people are like that. They're hungry ghosts. They always want more. They're never satisfied, and they're always craving and wanting. And perhaps all of us have a hungry ghost in us, that we're obsessed or compulsively thinking about something. We can never get enough of it. Hungry ghosts are often associated with the past. So people who are living in the past, reviewing the past, trying to have a better past, trying to come with a better rejoinder to a conversation that didn't go very well, trying to justify themselves for whatever they did in the past. I mean, I once left a commune that was very intense back in the mid-1970s. I lived there for a while, and for the next probably 6 months, almost anyone who would listen to me, I would justify why I left. I was like a hungry ghost in me, like, you know, they couldn't care less that I lived there or who I was even, but I had to tell them that, you know, like let me tell you about, you know, why I left. Because I guess I felt insecure, I felt very uncertain about what I had done, and so there's this hungry ghost in me, like, I wanted more, I wanted recognition, I wanted to make it all okay. There's a hungry ghost of people who just are full of greed. They just want more and more and more, and they just can never get enough of goods. And we have a culture of hungry ghost kids around the country today who, you know, can't get enough candy. So the hungry ghosts in us, or in people. And so what's interesting in this Sagaki ceremony, the idea is not to drive it away, but to feed it, to satisfy it in some way. But even though they put out offerings of food in the temples, the idea is that they can't really eat it, partly because their throats are so small, but also because they live in a different realm than we do. So they're not quite able to get what we offer them. But what they feed on is the generosity of the people who make the offerings. They feed on people's good deeds. Because if they see the good deeds that people do, and if they rejoice or appreciate those good deeds, that's what feeds them. It creates kind of good karma for them. But they have to witness it, and they have to appreciate it. Without the appreciation, you can't be fed. And so they do these joyous celebrations in Japan called Sagaki ceremonies, and partly because it's supposed to be a really good, grand old time to brighten the spirits and encourage these hungry ghosts to have deep appreciation in what's happening, and in the appreciation kind of partake in some of the good merit that's being created. So it's an interesting move, where things that are often considered frightened or something we don't want to pay attention to, there's a way of feeding it, of turning towards it. And they don't get what they want because they can't get the food. So, but you know, you can feed it in some different kind of way. So what are the disowned parts of you? What are the parts that you don't pay attention to, that you avoid, that you kind of repress perhaps, the shadow sides of your life? And is there a time when you can welcome it, invite it forth? Here, come, this is your day, Halloween. This is your day, and we're going to actually tend to you, and you're welcome today. Even though, you know, the complainer, I'm constantly complaining, but I don't let people know, but in my head I'm always complaining. Or I'm always dissatisfied with anything that's happening. Or I'm always resentful, or I'm always ambitious, or I'm always insecure, and I can't let people know how insecure I am. So whatever it might be, we invite it here we invite it in. Welcome, welcome. And then we don't exactly give it what it wants, because it can't really get what it wants, because it can never get enough. You can never get enough safety if you're really insecure. You can never get enough things if you're filled with greed. You can never get enough, you know. And so what is it that can feed it? What is it can really settle it? Settle the heart, settle the stomach. What is it that can nourish it so that something relaxes deeply? And I think for each person that has to be something different. But it's something that's positive, something that's healthy, something that's nourishing for the heart, nurturing for the heart. So in the Buddhist tradition, one of the things that is often celebrated as part of this nurturing of the heart is people's virtue, that of others, that of oneself. The tradition is when you come to a Buddhist temple on a holy day in Buddhism, you follow the precepts impeccably for that day. You're supposed to do it all the time, but at least for that day. And that's supposed to nourish yourself. Or you practice acts of generosity. You find people that could benefit from something that you have to offer, whether it's your time or your money or your food or your anything, counsel, that you come and offer. And that act of generosity is meant not to be a duty, but to be done in such a way that it inspires your heart, something settles your heart, does something good in you. What is it? How is it that generosity can do that for yourself? Participate in the Dharma is a classic Buddhist one. That there's something about the honesty and the truth-telling of sitting down in meditation that is very healing for the heart. So again, the greed and the hate and the insecurity doesn't get what it wants, but it gets something different. It gets the deep kind of sense of safety and well-being and nourishment of the Dharma, of the truth. So, but the important thing is you invite it. Come here. That part I don't want to see about myself, come here. There's a story of an old hermit who was considered to be very, very wise. And people would travel long distances to try to get advice from this hermit because he was so wise. And he had rumored to always have exactly the right advice for the people who came. And the thing was that he'd lived so far deep in the mountains without any roads, it would take 3 days of hiking in, backpacking and hiking in, to get to where he was. And then you get, if you're lucky, you got an audience with him, and he would listen to your concern. He'd give you the tailor-made advice for you. And then you'd have to walk out for 3 days. Most people, almost everyone who would go in there, would tell them their concerns, and he would tell them the advice. And most people like, what? Kind of disappointed. But by the time they had hiked 3 days out, that was perfect. That was the advice for me. Turns out he gave everyone the same advice. And the advice was, what are you avoiding? What are you avoiding? Which doesn't sound like that monumental when you first hear it, but if you can spend 3 days alone, maybe in nature on retreat, just having that echo through your mind, what am I avoiding? What am I avoiding? Being with yourself, staying with yourself, not being distracted, it'll show itself to you. And it'll be just the right thing for you to discover. So what is it you're avoiding? So I think of Halloween as that's the time to welcome those and look at it. There's a famous story of Milarepa, who was a Tibetan yogi who lived in the mountains and the caves and kind of a hermit type. And he was in his cave, and one day he went out to gather firewood or something, and he came back to his cave, and a host of demons had taken it over. Fierce demons with fangs and blood dripping down from their teeth and red fiery eyes that glared and saw you right through you, and claws that were 3 feet long and ready to just, you know, pierce anything that came close. So they were living in his cave, in his house, so he kind of like been practicing Buddhism for a long time, and you know, he thought he had good karma, he thought he had good wisdom and understanding, and he had some kind of understanding that, you know, it's everything's a projection of my mind. So there's not really demons there. So he went into his cave, and he sat down, and the first thing he did was he just praised them. You guys are great. And they just got snarlier, and they started showing more fangs and coming closer. They were like, thought he looked delicious. And so then he got up on his teaching seat, and he started giving a Dharma talk about compassion and emptiness and liberation and you know, they just kept advancing towards him. And so after a while, he was getting kind of annoyed that none of his good attempts at praising them and welcoming them and offering Dharma had worked. So then he got angry at them. And he yelled at them and swore and told them to leave. And they didn't leave. You know, they were getting closer now, and their hot, hot, fiery breath was, you know, beginning to incinerate his clothes. And it was getting serious. And so then he said, well, if you guys aren't leaving, I guess we're just going to live here together. We'll just accept each other and be here. And with that, all but one of them left. But the biggest, meanest, fiercest one was still there. And so all these other tricks of the trade that he had to try to expel these demons didn't work, even accepting them for that one. And so he said, okay, I guess I'll have to just surrender. So he walked towards this big, fierce demon. This one had the biggest teeth and the biggest mouth. I mean, huge, like 6 foot long, gaping mouth, you know, teeth that were just like, you know, sharp scissors pointing at each other. And he jumped right into the mouth and laid there. And then that one vanished. And then he was alone again in his cave. So that's a kind of a teaching story about, he didn't invite the demons in, but, you know, sometimes they come uninvited, our demons. But how do we deal with them? What do we do with the things that are really troublesome and difficult for us? So the Dharma, some people try to do praise or do good things or kind of pretend they're not there or just kind of try to be really nice, but doesn't work. Do good deeds. Some people try to rely on Dharma teachings and understandings and see if that can help, but sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes people try anger, that doesn't work. And sometimes people learn to just accept and allow and just be present. And that works for some of them, but not all of them. And then there's this kind of, you jump and dive right in. You don't fight, you don't try to get rid, you don't even accept, but you just kind of like dive right into it. Okay, you and me. And that's the thing that helps us heal or overcome or evaporate the challenges we have. So, the hungry ghosts, the demons, welcoming them. There's another story that's told in the ancient Buddhist texts of there's in the heaven in Buddhism, there's all these realms of heavens. And in one of the highest heavenly realms, there's a host of gods that live there. And that host of gods has a chief god called Brahma. And Brahma has a big palace. And that big palace has a big throne that only Brahma sits on because he's the chief. One day Brahma was off somewhere in his universe doing something. And while he was away, an ugly little runt of a troll came and just came into the palace and waddled up to his throne and jumped up and sat on his throne. And the other gods of the realm, the heavens, they got upset. You can't sit up there. That's the throne of the great god Brahma. And so, as they were angry and he refused to get down, not only did he refuse to get down, but as he was sitting there, he got bigger and bigger. And he grew to be stronger and stronger and more beautiful and radiant and just powerful sitting there on the throne. And so the gods got pretty confused. So they went and found Brahma and said, something's happening at home. We don't understand. And there's this ugly runt of a little troll sat on your throne and he's just growing there and he won't leave. I know what's going on, he said. I'll come back. So he went back. And he stood in front of the troll, and he put his hands together in Anjali, and he bowed and said, "Welcome. I hope you're comfortable up there. It's nice to have you. Stay as long as you wish." And he offered all this kindness to him. And as he did it, the troll shrank and shrank. It got smaller and smaller and smaller until, poof, it vanished. And then Brahma got up on his throne, and he explained, that was an anger-eating troll. And if you are angry with it, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But if you stop feeding it anger, then it shrinks. So, trolls, demons, hungry ghosts. What's your favorite animal? What are you avoiding? And how do you step into it? How do you relate to it? How do you welcome it? How do you invite it once in a while? What do you do? So when Buddhism has these Sagaki ceremonies, or these ceremonies, it is meant to be an invitation and a welcoming of these unseen parts of us or avoided parts of ourselves, things that we don't usually bring into the center and hold in some way. And then we hold it in the space, allow it to be there, and maybe that's enough. And then, you know, just to name it is a quite powerful thing. So I would like to suggest that we have a naming ceremony now. Now, probably none of you have any unseen parts that you're avoiding that you could invite and name here. But you probably know of some that are floating around our society. And maybe we could name some of these things. And no one will know that it's yours if you name it, because it could be your neighbors, or it could be, you know, the politicians or something. But I wonder if you're game to... We can just kind of popcorn style. Why don't you name some of the things that humans or you, that's a part of, that's there, sometimes kind of tucked away and often not something people want to acknowledge or see or admit, that would be nice to kind of name once a year. What are such things? So if somebody would start and just...
Scaredy cat.
Scaredy cat. But do it loudly and I'll repeat it. I heard.
TV movie hungry ghost.
TV movie hungry ghost.
Jealousy or envy.
Jealousy or envy.
Judgment.
Judgments.
Resentment.
resentment.
The missing wise father figure.
The missing wise father figure.
Loneliness.
Loneliness.
Desire for attention.
Desire for attention. Sitting next, what?
Divisiveness.
Divisiveness.
Shame.
Ignorance.
Ignorance.
Propaganda machine that makes people think others are evil.
Propaganda machines that makes people think others are evil.
Stress. Stress.
I can louder.
Stress.
Stress. Stress. Stress. Yeah. Missing nurturing mother.
Inattention to suffering.
Inattention to suffering.
Addiction.
Addiction.
Dishonesty.
Dishonesty. Impatience. Not knowing how to have a healthy conversation. So ignorance.
Competition.
Competition.
Scarcity.
Scarcity. A feeling of scarcity.
Neediness.
Neediness. Ingratitude. I couldn't hear that. Manipulativeness.
Fear of the world we imagine we see.
Fear of the world we imagine we see. All those demons.
Lost opportunity.
Lost opportunity.
Power hungriness.
Power hungriness.
Perfectionism.
Perfectionism. Failure.
Arrogance.
Arrogance. Complacency? Yeah. Good.
Ego.
Ego. Selfishness. Well, that was a great list. And I feel kind of full of all that. So all that is welcomed. And so you should know that in the Dharma, there's a way in which all those qualities, when they exist in you, are welcomed. And in a certain kind of way, when they exist in other people and they come here, they're welcomed. The idea is that this is supposed to be a place where it's safe and kind of, not if welcoming is the right word, but safe or allowing to hold it in the space of awareness and compassion. It doesn't necessarily mean we condone these things, but we allow it to surface and show itself without being critical or saying it's wrong or you shouldn't do it. It's just welcome. And in that welcoming, in the practice, in our hearts, in the community like this, then hopefully there's a way in which something can resolve itself or heal itself or settle itself. But something that needs to be fed deep inside can be fed and be nourished. So the hungry ghosts can finally get their throats opened up. Or the hungry ghosts can evolve, because in Buddhism, no one's ever stuck as a hungry ghost. They always evolve into something else. So hopefully they can evolve into a being that can be liberated and free. So I think it's a powerful thing that Dharma practice is a practice that we never turn our backs to ourselves, to any parts of ourselves. And hopefully as a Dharma community, we never turn our backs towards anybody, but rather we figure out how to practice with it, how to meet it with care, with compassion, with respect, with the dedication to find the truth and find the freedom in the midst of it. And so all those things that were listed are appropriate to have present in Dharma practice, or have if they're there for you. It's not something you have to avoid. You come here, you don't have to be embarrassed by it or be afraid to show it. This is a place where hopefully we can hold it with care and respect and compassion, because then the practice has a chance to work it. Our practice can kind of find its way through it. And so once we admit it, stop avoiding some of these things, and once we kind of welcome it and allow it to be here, what do you think are some of the many choices of what can be a healthy way to heal or transform these things into health, into well-being, into freedom? What are the health? You don't want to just feed it candy, because then it won't get satisfied. It won't really feed. It won't really settle something. But what are some of the things you can do that can transform these into health and freedom? So just as we did popcorn style before, what are some of the things that occur to you that can be done?
Understanding.
Forgiveness.
Compassion.
Really listen to the story.
Really listen to the story.
Loving kindness.
Connection. Real connection. Find common ground with yourself, something you can relate to inside. When it's in you, for example. Yeah. Some people live divided inside of themselves.
Acceptance.
Staying present. Maybe that's the most powerful sometimes. Just being present for it.
Comforting.
Non-attachment. What else can you offer to our little ceremony here? These are all things to evoke, and as we name them, hopefully you'll take them in and be fed by them. So what more?
Education.
Acknowledgement. Recognition.
Attention.
What? I heard something in that area. Gratitude.
Some kind of a ceremony that releases that idea, maybe a
A ceremony of release, like burning. Mm-hmm. Sorry?
Ethical behavior.
I saw hers.
Allowing.
Mm-hmm.
Humor.
Great. Thank you.
Remembering impermanence.
Keep it company.
Show it recognition.
One thing to recognize, and the other thing is to really show the recognition. Nice.
An openness for change.
That's necessary, yeah, because without that, maybe we're stuck.
Asking for help.
Letting go.
Lightness. On the way to enlightenedness.
Emptiness.
Modesty.
Articulation.
Give it a voice.
Humility.
Simpleness.
Gentleness. So from all that, I appreciated the first list of all the things that our people avoid. There was a long list, and it's even a longer list if we really were thorough. And I appreciated this list of all these good actions, good activities we can do that are healing or transforming or freeing. And that was also a long list that could be even a lot longer. And it points to there's a lot going on in the human heart, in the human mind. It's a whole ecology of things that we can notice in ourselves, things we can do, things we can approach. And there's a wide range of choices of things to pick from that are healing and helpful to do. Not just one. So, tomorrow is November 1st, which is All Saints' Day. Or for Buddhists, it's the Day of Enlightenment. So it's a kind of special day tomorrow. So you have about, technically about 3 hours and 2 minutes through the night to complete this Halloween exercise for yourself, and see if you can this evening be welcoming to that which you avoid. Welcome the demons that you're struggling with. Welcome the hungry ghosts. Welcome the anger-eating trolls. Welcome it all. And then evoke in you some of the powers of goodness that you have. Not to get rid of the demons, but to feed those demons, feed that part of yourself with genuine goodness that you have, maybe from that list of things we talked about now. And then maybe kind of wish and hope that as you go to sleep tonight, that the alchemy of your demons and your goodness can somehow
join together, blend together in your sleep, in your dreams, so that you wake up in the morning ready to join the saints and enlightened beings in a new transformed world where you're a little bit more, or very much more, freed, healed, and nourished. May Halloween be freeing, healing, and nourishing for you and your demons. Thank you.